everyone, welcome to another episode of Soulful. This is the podcast that reveals everything you've ever wanted to know about sneakers, hosted by myself, Kish Cash, and my good homie, my brother from another, the handsome chap that you can't see, which is probably good, Jason Coles. How are you doing, Jace? You all right, mate?
Oh, thanks very much. I'm good, Kish. I'm really good. I am really excited about today's episode. I have to say, yeah, we've got someone who is really going to get the Adidas fans' pulses racing, because today we've got the legend, Mr. Jacques Chassaigne.
Mate, I tell you what, how you've nailed this interview, I don't know, but I have to say I'm a complete stan on this guy, a complete fanboy, because the things that he has done in his career have just resonated throughout, you know, just everything that I've ever been involved in. Absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, he's involved with just some of those landmark shoes that I know you and I and millions of fans out there love. So, you know, shoes like the Forum, yeah. You know, probably one of the most innovative basketball shoes ever made. Then, you know, the shoe that he is synonymous with, the ZX, you know, the archetypal running shoe, yep. Arguably, yep. You know, completely redefined what a running shoe was back in the 80s and 90s.
Still, the whole series still, you know, especially the 1000 series, still there's nothing design-wise that looks anything close to it. And, you know, the way that the reverence that's been shown over the years for that silhouette, you know, from the ZX 5000 all the way through to the 9000s, is absolutely amazing. But then he's also the designer of the ZX 500 as well, isn't he? And all the subsequent shoes.
Exactly. I mean, there were so many of them, and I think, and hopefully we're going to find out, you know, it was probably one of the first kind of running shoes where no matter what kind of runner you were, there was a shoe out there for you. And that was a really, yeah, new idea at the time, you know, this kind of almost bespoke shoe.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like he became, you know, beyond just being a mere designer, but actually having a look at, you know, offering different solutions to the fabric of athletics, as it were.
Absolutely. And I think you hit it there, Kish. I think when you say those words, Jacques Chassaigne, you know, he is more than just a designer to people. Mm. You know, he's a legend. I mean, the guy had a career spanning probably four decades at Adidas, you know, maybe even longer than Adidas himself, I don't know.
Well, there you go. I mean, is there a chap who's ever, you know, been so synonymous with the brand that's helped shape their destiny to the degree that Jacques Chassaigne has? You know?
Good question.
You know, there's a lot of rivals there for that accolade, yeah. But Adidas and Jacques Chassaigne, they just a marriage.
Exactly.
It's a marriage of perfection.
Well, should we do this? Let's dive in. Mr. ZX himself, yeah. Jacques Chassaigne. So Jacques, welcome to the show. Kish and I are absolutely stoked you could join us today, because you've designed some of the most loved shoes in sneaker history. And in terms of greatest hits, you're probably like the Beatles or Queen of kicks. So let's go right back to the beginning. Where did this amazing life journey all start for you?
Yeah, sure. Was it ZX 500, you know, was the starting point of this ZX collection. And the idea was at that time that we have to look at the runs, you know. We had to look at the runs. Before, we were doing collections, running collections. There was no really structure in a collection. So, you know, we did sometimes a running shoe. We said, okay, it's for road runners. Then we did another shoe, oh, maybe it's for trail runners. The ZX 500 or the ZX thing was the first thing where we said, so we do the shoes according to the expectations of different types, yeah, of runners, heavy, right, guys, light guys, different surfaces where you are running, road, trail, or something. Is it training or is it competition? And we built up a kind of structure. That's the reason why you had the ZX 500 was one of the first stable shoe, you know, because of its construction. When the next shoe was the 600, which was more for road because of the construction of the outsole. Then you had a 700, right, which was more a kind of, I would say, more off-road shoe because of the profile of a tread of the outsole, and so on. And going on, we built up this kind of ZX 100 series, starting from 500 until 930, according to some needs of, right, runners. When torsion came in, we went into more deep into this kind of structure of runners, and we defined three, yeah, types of runners. The guys who were neutral guys. We were just looking for cushioning. So you had the ZX 1000 series just for cushioning. Then you had the guys looking for more support. When you had the ZX 1000 series for more support. And then you had the guys for the 4 foot runners, when you had using a needing a need, you needed a shoe which was more mm-hmm. guidance shoe because you are 4 foot runner. Mm-hmm. For me, the ZX thing is I would say you put some discipline in your collection, you know, basically, and you, I think you take care of yeah. runners, you take care of our consumers. You don't just sure. do a running shoe for That's the right. sake of a That's running right. shoe. You do it yeah. for some purpose. That's the thing.
So what does the ZX mean? Where did the term ZX come from, and who was behind that?
You know, the ZX thing is a lot of people ask me, where is it coming from? And everybody was expecting a kind of scientific explanation. Yeah. But this was nothing. And this is a little bit what I explained about the French guys. This is something which came out from our marketing right. guys. And we were thinking about what was going on at that time. And, you know, you had a famous motor bikes brand, Kawasaki, yes. Coming out with some different bikes. And the range was called ZX. And then they had yeah. different power, 500, I don't know when that by exact. And this was, we just took this same right. thing. And we thought it was so, even the ZX, you know, the name, it's not serious. It doesn't mean, you know, it's not engineered. It, uh-huh. It's pretty sexy.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
So that's and it brings you some fun. The thing in you cannot, at least it's what I think, you should, even you are technically in a shoe, Jesus, you need to
yeah,
have fun.
Of course.
You know? You cannot just say today, it's like today, you know, you explain to the guy 10 features mm-hmm. of a shoe and explain this is bringing that, and that. And I think after the second and the third explanation, the guy doesn't take care anymore. The technical thing is important, but you have to bring it, to communicate it in a way that the guy is attracted.
That's it. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, yeah, ZX, it just sounds, wow, this sounds sporty. It sounds like it does something.
It does,
and
yeah.
And as you said, Jacques, you know, talking about cars and, you know, and bikes and all that kind of stuff. And it was just like, if you added all the noughts on, it's like, hold on a sec, it's like, you know, ZX 500, and then you can get ZX 600, and it's like, okay, that sounds even better. Do you know what I mean? It's like boom, 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 and it just stacks up. Out of the ZX 100 series, not the 1000 series, out of the 100 series, what was your favorite shoe out of all of those ones?
I think the 500 has a special part or special corner in my emotional
yeah.
world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it was the first shoe, and it was so interesting because of the construction of a midsole mm-hmm. too. You know, this kind of diagonal thing when you look at the shoe, how the midsole is constructed, and even the plugs on the bottom, on the outsole, this kind of suction plugs, which, you know, it was, everything is related to what Adidas did in the past, to what Adidas did, Adidas did. I just mentioned the suction mm-hmm. plugs, you know, Adidas did one time a shoe with suction outsole. And it's, the thing is, I was not just 100% reinventing the game, you know, I was mm-hmm. just trying to be true to the history of a brand, to the history of what Adidas did mm-hmm. in the past. Because for me, Adidas was probably, he cannot be called a designer. For me, he's called a creator. Yeah. He is called a guy who understood the athlete and who understood which kind of solutions he could bring to the athletes because they had this and this problem, or because they wanted to improve their performance. Yeah. And the solutions he brought, and there is a good example when you look at the old track and field shoes. You know, when you look at the heel, you have this kind of cross, you know, straps on the back. And this kind of thing, this was basically at the beginning a functional solution to solve some problems. And now it's a more design feature. Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I like to think of him almost as an inventor. You know, some of the ideas, and not all of them work, but you mentioned the suction cap shoe. And I saw that in Herzo in in the archive. And I remember the guys were telling me that when he tried it, he went to the tennis court on the by the Adidas factory and covered it with soap flakes and water to try this shoe out, this suction cap thing, which I thought was just, you know, an amazing way to do it.
Yeah, this is a kind of, you know, even we are in 2020, you know, all this kind of the way the guy was working, it's still something which can be done today, you know.
Yeah.
And I know we have a lot of computers today. We have a kind of digital things which is going on. And I hope that in the future, you will not have just sitting in front of a computer and say, hey, and 10 minutes later, you have a shoe coming out. I hope this will not happen that way. But, you know, this was the best, I would say, the best attitude at that time to find solutions and to create new products.
How did the older designers look at you and what you was coming up with? Because aesthetically, I look at, you know, the ZX500 and what happened prior as, you know, there's a distinct sort of schism, do you know what I mean, in terms of, and that's just to my eyes, and I might be wrong with that, but it seems like there's a post-era, and there's a pre-era, and there's a post-era, and the ZX500 just like was very revolutionary for its time.
You know, it's probably more or less depending on the designer who is working on the product, you know. And I think it's something I always told to the designers. You have to keep your personality. You have to keep what you are, and you have to show it in a product. You cannot do design because somebody is telling you have to do this line like curved or this line square. It's your personality. It's your attitude you have to reflect in a product. And that's just what I did. You know?
I always feel people like yourselves are actually artists, you know, who have to apply their artistry in a functional form. But you might not look at it like that.
I don't know. I don't want to be called an artist. I accept one word as a creator because I think I even hate designer. You know, the word designer because it's used so in a so common way today, you know, because everybody thinks he is a designer. You know, you go to a hairdresser on the first road and he's called designer, you know. It's the thing is, being creator is I think is a little bit more than just, you can be a good designer, you can do some nice drawings, but you need creativity. And creativity is not something you can learn in a school. Creativity is something, is a gut feeling. Creativity is intuitive. It's coming from, it's not something you can learn, you know. You have this kind of quality or you don't have it.
Totally. Well,
but you know, some of the colors that you were coming out with on the ZX shoes. I mean, the one that always springs to mind for me, because I remember the first time I saw it, was the ZX 8000. I think it
what
was
a shoe. What
the
a
Aqua,
shoe.
You know, which had blue, it had purple and yellow, and just that, and also the mix of materials that you had on that shoe. Again, at that time, I don't think I'd ever seen, you know, suede used alongside, you know, poly materials, and just this incredible, you know, combination of different techs and different materials all in one shoe. So, I mean, to me, that's almost like art, what you did with some of those shoes.
You know, it's, first of all, I was not alone doing this. You know, we were a team, and I don't want to take everything on my side. Yeah, we were a team in France and Germany, and we met together, and it was the whole thing coming out of a ZX5000 series was a collegial outcome. This has to be clear. I'm not the only guy. It's the colors. When we decided to launch with ZX1000 series, the biggest feature in the 1000 series was torsion. And this was a new technology. It was an innovation. And usually, you know, you have to make a big splash when you come out with something new, with an innovation, you have to make the buzz. You know? And you can make the buzz not only because you can explain the technology will give me this kind of performance or this kind of performance, but when you go in a store, you have also to have a guy going in the store and not seeing another gray shoe or another red shoe or another blue shoe. He wants to see something which is splashing. So this was the other, I would say, purpose or target. Make it visible, make it visually attractive. And the other side, you know, Adidas, one of the focus was always Olympics. Mm-hmm. And for each Olympic Games, Adidas was coming out with a kind of Olympic collection. And the Olympic is probably the greatest window where you can show what you are, what you can do, or what you plan to do.
The biggest advertisement.
And that's the reason why for Seoul, we did this collection. And this collection for Seoul, the only collection was using this kind of bright colors, you know, purple, all this yellow, and even the materials. And we said, okay, this gives a kind of great impact, and why not using this kind of color concept or material concept in ZX? And that's mm-hmm. where you ended up this kind of, this all this.
Well, colors. That's crazy, because the legacy of doing that has now permeated through, because when you look at athletic shoes post the 8000, all these athletic shoes came out like crazy colors, and like marathon runners running in this and trying to be flamboyant and stand out, etc. And all the other brands took heed from that, didn't they?
This is what I said too. We spoke before about fun, about entertainment in when you are doing sport, and that's also part of it. You know, it will be kind of a wow effect when you see, oh, I'm wearing this kind of stuff. You know, and you know, but again, it was something which it was a risk. You know, but in any product you want to do, risk is part of your job.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And if you fail, you fail, but you will learn something. And if you don't fail, you succeed. And
so, it's all about progression, isn't it, in terms of design and, you know, better technologies come into play. With regards to all the technologies that you've had to work with, was it hard sometimes to find a solution to marry up to the technology, or did the technology inform your design process to a certain degree?
I would say it's both of the two things, you know. Technology can, I would say, inform you about the design, can give you some directions. And when you look at the ZX1000 series with torsion, what was the function of torsion? Torsion was discovered, I would say, when we did the difference in our biomechanical labs. We showed at that time regular running shoes, which are basically shoes with flat soles. And when you are running, because of your running phase, when you are landing on your heel, when you go to your basically just fast to a forefoot for the impulse, you had a rotation happening in your foot when you are running barefoot, as an example. But the shoes at that time were pretty with flat soles, and we were a little bit against the natural movement of your foot when you were running. And so the idea was to split the outsole in two. And that's the reason you have in the torsion concept, we have this kind of grooves when you look in the midfoot.
Yeah.
And these grooves were weakening up the mid part of your shoe. And this was allowing the coupling heel and front forefoot. This was allowing to give you this kind of more or less freedom to your natural movement of your foot. The other problem which came up when we did these grooves, it was weakening up the midfoot, and when you give the weight of your body, what could happen at that time was collapsing in mid part. That's the reason why we add the shank, mm-hmm. which is called torsion bar. The torsion bar is like a shank, you know. If you look at dress shoes, you know, when you have your dress shoes, leather sole, heel, and forefoot. And you have inside the shoe, let's say when you cut your shoe, the guys are using a shank, which can be in metal or which could be also in wood. And this was basically the same idea, because if you don't put a shank in your dress shoe, you will have your midfoot, which will, I would say, collapse, you know.
It's like a bridge. Is it like a sort of like a bridge, you know, support
beam? It's like a bridge. And at the same time, this shank or this torsion bar was also, I would say, limiting the torsion ability of your shoe, because it was reinforcing the part, and it was reinforcing and regulating a little bit where you have a torsion point, which is happening in the midfoot. It was regulating also the torsion ability torsion ability.
Why does the torsion bar look like we understand the concept behind it? Why is the torsion bar yellow for one, And why is it the shape that it is? Is it informed by, you know, the solution it's trying to offer?
Now, the color is was a color which was like decided like the color of shoe. You know?
Right.
But we decided, so the only thing what was decided, we decided is that because it's a technical piece, we said it's one, I would say it's one technology which is used in different shoes. So we keep the same color, just a kind of idea of the technology.
Okay.
So it was present across all of the ZX shoes. So it's almost like you could turn it over.
At the beginning, yeah.
Wow.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah. And it's the same. It was the same thing when you look at the equipment. The torsion bar was green.
Of course, that's right. Yeah, that's right. It's a cross shape, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I think it was, for me, it's more or less a kind, it shows also that you are serious about your technology. And you are not playing around using it in blue, in yellow, or green. Or something.
Definitely. Right. Yeah.
But what the truth is that after some years, it was a little bit, people played around with different colors, which I didn't agree.
Wow. Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, also, when you also have one color, it means your production run, the costs go down as well, don't they? Because you don't have to do, you know, produce it in multiple colors. It's like this, boom, 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 and we can range it out accordingly, which is quite fantastic.
So you like the production
guys. Yeah, I like to look at all aspects of everything. It's like when you remove that midfoot part, it also reduces the weight, doesn't it? So you got the heel and you got the forefoot. And the middle bit's gone, so the weight of the shoe gets reduced as well, which is a benefit to the athlete, possibly.
Yeah, but on the other side, you are also weakening up much more the midfoot.
Well, that
and it's then not okay because when you have this, when you have the forefoot is doing this and the heel is doing that, and then your foot is going
that's
like
it.
That.
Yeah. That's it. But
you can do this. You can do this if at the same time you use the thickness of your midsole when you do an almost flat sole. But it's okay. You don't need.
I've always been curious, right? Because we on our previous series we chatted to Stephen Smith, and he designed the Reebok Pump Fury, and that has a massive, you know, carbon fiber plate in the midfoot, right? I'm wondering if he took its inspiration from the torsion, because obviously he worked on the torsion artillery, and maybe that DNA sort of fed through an informed design process there.
You have to ask
I don't know
him.
If you guys ever had. Did you guys ever work alongside each other at any point or not? I don't know.
I don't know. I think at that time he was in Portland. I was in Germany, so it was a
right. How was the communication between Portland and Germany? Was there a lot of cross pollination of ideas, or was there like you going, "Wow, I didn't think of that idea," or them going, "What is Jacques doing? He's a maverick genius over there. We got to get out to France."
No, we had the chance to have two great guys at that time was Rob Strasser and Peter Moore. And Rob Strasser from the marketing side and Peter Moore from the creative direction side. And there was communication going on, exchange going on. And we had meetings in New York. As an example, in New York, Adidas had a kind of color office, trend and color office. And I think it was in Seoul. And we met, I think, two or three times a year, and where Portland and Germany, Herzogenaurer, we were presenting our stuff, you know. And then Peter Moore was the guy who was driving this kind of the two offices, in one in Portland and one in Germany. And he was the guy who was getting everybody in the right direction and from a branding, from a CI point of view, and also from a conceptual point of view.
You're listening to Soulful Sneaker Stories, a Soho Radio original.
Wow, that's crazy. So the thing is, you know, when you was going to New York, were you actually going around New York and seeing how Adidas had been completely reappropriated by, you know, like fans of Adidas in a way that you hadn't considered, because it wasn't athletic performance, you know, it was a lot of like b-boys, a lot of graffiti artists and a lot of rappers, etc. And seeing it in that light and seeing, you know, wow, we didn't anticipate that, but this is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, sure. I think it was always part of our job to go out and to see what people are wearing, not just Adidas, but what was going on with Adidas. And it was not only New York, you know, it could have been Los Angeles, it could have been different cities, it could have been some cities in Europe or in Asia, you know. Yeah. I think we had to be on top of what was going on in the world, you know.
Yeah. When Peter Moore and Rob Strasser came over from Nike, Jacques, did they have a big impact on the way the company was in terms of the company spirit and direction? And, you know, what kind of impact did they have? Did they kind of bring a bit of Nike into Adidas, or how did it work?
I think, personally, when Rob Strasser and Peter Moore came to Adidas, I think for me it was just the biggest chance I could have in my job, you know, to meet these two guys and to work with them. And I had the chance, because they asked me when we presented equipment, they asked me to work with them to do the footwear stuff. Right. And this was for me, I would say, exactly how I could approach design, or how I could approach creating new products. I don't know if it's about it's Nike or thing, but I don't think so. I think the personality of Peter Moore or the personality of Rob Strasser, this was the main thing, you know. And I remember Rob Strasser, I had my office in Germany, and it was a time where every morning Rob Strasser came into my office in the morning and said, "So, Jacques, what are we doing today?" Uh-huh. And then he came out and said, "So let's do a shoe like this." And I remember we started to do, I would say, what has been called later, a kind of the lifestyle thing, you know, because we took, we took a rugby upper, and we put a flat outsole to walk on the road.
You know? I remember seeing something like
and,
that.
We even took a track and field or cycling. You know, Adidas was famous for cycling shoes with Eddy Merckx and too. Uh-huh. So we took the Eddy Merckx upper, but instead of putting a cycling sole, we put a kind of flat sole with a small heel just to walk around on the road. So it also was a little bit the beginning. I still have some prototype. This was still the beginning, I think, of this what could be called lifestyle, you know, the street style.
Yeah.
And what I want to say about Rob Strasser, he was a guy, he was a positive, crazy guy, you know. He had always ideas. And he was, and for him, there was nothing against something you could do, you know. You had an idea, and if the idea was okay, we had to do it. Sorry to say it, just do it. but he was the straight guy, and there was not a lot of discussion, you know. And I think Adidas, sometimes it was a bit difficult because you had to go through a lot of people to get something. But for him, he was just saying, "Oh, your idea, I want to see it in 2 weeks on the table."
Fantastic.
You know? And then we had to do everything. And we had to do the stuff. Or there was other things, you know, we put us sometimes in the two of our guys, you know, in a room, and he told us, you know, "You guys, you have 2 hours now, you are doing a new basketball."
That's brilliant.
Stuff.
Not a high top
shoe, but it was a more mid-price shoe, a more commercial thing. And I tell you, two hours later, we had the shoe on the table, not the shoe, but we had the idea. I don't know how you call this, you know, he had the capacity to drive people, you know.
Yeah.
And Peter Moore was really the creative guy, you know. He had a lot of ideas, and I can say that it's what I told you already. Peter is even my mentor, is still my mentor today, you know. Yeah, we still have contact. We have. We still have contact. We are not. We don't have contact yeah. every day, but it's. We respect each other, and I think it's.
Have you guys just ever joked about the fact that you had Michael Jordan wore your shoe first, and yet that Peter Moore went and designed the Air Jordan 1, and it's like, you know, and you actually ended up working with the guy who kind of, who knows where, as we've already said, where it would have gone. But have you ever joked about that moment, you know?
No, but I think it's a nice story.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
It's just a nice story.
Have a beer, you know.
I mean, a lot of people don't know. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that it was Strasser and Moore who kind of came up with the idea of originals, wasn't it, Jacques? That the idea of kind of bringing back much loved shoes from the archive. So, you know, shoes like the Gazelle and the Stan Smith, which, you know, were still loved by people, but kind of bringing them back for a new generation of people.
Yeah, that's the idea of Rob Strasser and Peter Moore, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember we had a meeting in it was a bank holiday in Germany, and we had a 4 hours or 5 hours meeting, and when we came out with the originals idea. But at that time, we said we take the classic shoes, and we were looking at consumers, what we were looking at that time for, and it was comfort, you know. So we just adapted the original shoes. With some improved features like the tongue of the shoes, we made it a little bit more.
I remember
padded.
The Superstar 2 had the more padded tongue, right?
Yeah, the collar, the quarter collar, we put it a different form inside. The inlay sole, we just tried to increase or improve the comfort of the shoes. And this was a starting point of Origins.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
And that's the reason why you had these shoes at that time. You had a new tongue label with Adidas, a linear Adidas, and below Origins.
Yeah, because I remember when Adidas equipment happened, and it was almost like, you know, the whole moving forward, you know, Adidas moving forward, you know, we're going with the triangle logo design and the trefoil and that. From your perspective, you know, how much of a crazy move possibly, or was it a move that you appreciated, or was it a move that you thought, you know what, this is showing progression and this is showing innovation, this is showing where, you know, how Adidas should be coming? Because from a purist point of view, all these guys such as myself were growing up with a trefoil, we're in tears, we're going like, what's going on, like that.
I think it's this was equipment, I used to say. And to be honest, at that time, Adidas had big problems, you know. It was, the company was not going well, and it was a little bit kind of chaotic collections, and Adidas was losing a little bit, I would say, where Adidas was coming from, you know. Yeah. And the equipment concept, when Peter and Rob came to present it, it was basically... just do the best for the athlete, and this is basically what Adidas did. So it was a little bit more going back to how Adidas started, how Adidas philosophy was applied, and this was basically the same thing for equipment. You know, we just did equipment was just what you do to perform.
Yeah.
And not overloaded stuff, or not too crazy stuff, and not. But more this kind of the essentials. Mm-hmm. No, that's basically what we call equipment. And to launch this kind of collection, you know, the idea was, I would say, do it totally new, including branding. And that's why we use this kind of new logo.
I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I still look at the EQT basketball boot with the removable sock, and you could change the color of the sock, etc., with absolute awe. It was just like, what? Adidas doing, this is amazing, you know. Absolutely fantastic, you know. But look,
it was an amazing time then, wasn't it, in just terms of innovation and what was happening with Adidas, you know, getting the company, you know, back up on its feet, I guess. And I mean, were you kind of often looking at what other people were doing, or were you just very much focused on, you know, Adidas and having those ideas, as you mentioned, you know, the whole philosophy of Adidas, you know, the best for the athlete as such? Did you kind of try to just stay focused on what Adidas was, or did you find yourself kind of looking at what, you know, Reebok were doing or what Puma were doing?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think when you do this kind of job, you have to look what the other guys are doing, not for copying, but you have to judge yourself when you, let's say you put an Adidas shoe on a table and you put a Nike shoe beside, then you have to say what is good, what is positive, what is negative. Right. I'm better than the other guy, or are these guys better than me? So it's a kind of battle, a fight. And that's to do this, you have to know what the other guys are doing.
The only way you can improve is by that process, isn't it?
Yeah, and that is just about the kind of you judge yourself about, are you good enough? Mm.
So,
And it's the same thing, you know. At that time, we were going to all these exhibitions. I think you had ISPO in Germany, then you had some exhibitions in the States too, and. The thing, exhibitions, you have a business side, that's okay. But for our designers, it's worth just having a chance to see what the other guys are doing. And just after the exhibition, say, maybe I'm not so good like the other guys, so I have to improve. No, that's the thing. You have to defend a position. And if being part of a company like Adidas, you cannot just stay and say, oh, I'm looking what the other guys are doing. That's okay for me.
Yeah.
You have to say, no, I can do
better. What shoes have you looked at throughout your career and gone, oh my gosh, I wish I'd designed that because that's amazing, or okay, I see that, but I think I did better?
No, I don't agree with what you are saying. I respect all the brands because I know exactly what the job of a designer is, and I think I always say to my designers, Humility is something which is one of the biggest quality of a designer. You cannot be the best.
Oh no, I'm not saying you're the best. I'm just saying that you saw one model that somebody did and gone, oh, I like that.
But I have a lot of respect for a shoe like the Air Max. Because it was, I think even today, you know, it's not bullshit, you know, but look at these shoes, they have been done years ago and they are still relevant for today. And this is something which you have to respect. I don't want to say I would have designed an Air Max or I would have designed a Stan Smith, but it's respect for the guys who did that.
Of course, you know, you acknowledge your peers and you give them due credit, etc., you know. And, you know, that's absolutely brilliant. You know, I think when we've chatted, you know, Jason, I've been so fortunate to chat to other designers, and the way they've spoken about things is just absolutely brilliant. And, you know, that's that designer community right there. And I think it's important that people realize that you guys are adding so much, you know, so much to the world, you know, some by design and some, you know, out of consequence. And what you guys do is fantastic.
I can tell you one thing is I would have designed a Bang & Olufsen.
Oh wow, my favorite stereo brand.
Yeah.
And you know what? Because I think this was the philosophy of these guys. It was one of the best way to align style and design.
Yes. Yeah.
Style and function, you know. It was for me, I was looking at this stuff like sculptures.
Yes.
And you know, and something which is making, you know, it was more or less function is given. We know how to do it, but we just do a kind of, how would you say, we dress it in a way, but it is really a style.
No, totally.
Absolutely. I remember I just remember seeing a remote control from, you know, one of the early B&O TV sets that actually had a remote control. And just that in itself was just, you know, a thing of beauty. I mean, it looked like it was about, you know, 2 or 3 feet long. But just looking at this thing, and, you know, you'd almost just admire it sitting on the coffee table. And that's what's... You know, that's just an example of a great piece of design.
Yeah. I remember seeing the turntable that you could actually mount on your wall. And I was just like, you can do that? That's just absolutely beautiful. You know, Bang & Olufsen. Yeah. When you're looking at cars, for example, I mean, I remember one of the Kobe shoes was inspired by the Audi TT. Have any cars throughout your, you know, you've looked upon and gone, you know, I like the aesthetics of that, and I want to see if I can sort of channel that in some way through my work?
Honestly, no. I think inspiration, when you're doing sport shoes, you know, I think it's sport. You have so much to look at when you look players, basketball guys, when you look runners, when you look the body of these guys, when you look at the movements, when you look at the motions, and the motions misdefines the design, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And over the anatomy of the foot or something like that. I was much more looking at this kind of area to get the inspiration.
But interestingly enough, though, Jacques, I mean, I know you headed up Adidas's collaboration with Porsche, didn't you? So how did you kind of, I guess, take the design language of Porsche and kind of bring that to Adidas? What how was the process? How did that work?
Well, the process started with, I would say, the visit of the design studio of Porsche. Not mm-hmm. the car studio, but the, you know, Porsche Design has a studio in Austria.
Right.
And because Porsche Design started with F.A. The guy of Porsche, who wanted not just to do cars, but he wanted to do also some other stuff. And that's this was the beginning of Porsche Design. And we went to this design studio in Austria, and there was a room of F.A. Porsche where he was working. And this room was the 100% one-to-one room or office he started to work. And when you go into this kind of room, the emotional atmosphere you can get, this makes you thinking about a lot of things. So this was part of one step, you know. And then I went to, okay, I visited the Porsche, the car factories, the car offices, and I had a look at all the Porsche design products, objects, discussion with a Porsche designer. And I was also thinking that there was a kind of similarity with what the Adidas philosophy. And this was a little bit for me, probably an easy thing coming from Adidas to combine the two philosophies.
Yeah, I know what you mean about sometimes when you, I can imagine when you went to Ferry Porsche's office, because I remember going to Herzo where they have, as you will no doubt know, they have like a recreation of Adi Dassler's workshop. They have one of his benches. And when you see that, that in itself is just very inspiring to see where these things actually happened and the way that he worked. And, you know, just that kind of alone inspires you to go and, you know, create.
Yeah, there's a word which is coming at your mind, in your mind when you look at this, is, or when you stay in this office, is craftsmanship. And this is something you, as a designer, you can never forget, you know. You should never forget. And when I started in the shoe industry, you know, before joining Adidas, I had spent already 10 years in the shoe industry. And at that time, the people doing products were not called designers, you know. We had a word in French or in German, which is a modeler, you know, and you were supposed to do design, and we were supposed to do the shoes ourselves, you know. So we were doing, putting ideas together, doing the design of the shoe, and then doing the patterns, and doing also sewing, cutting, sewing, stitching, lasting. So basically, we were able to do a shoe from A to Z. Today it's a little bit different story, which is okay, you know. Designers, it's a different job, and you have other people doing the rest of the process. But at that time, I learned to do how to do to last the shoe, you know, or everything by hand. I had to work in a factory, you know, on the lines, you know. I had to spend several weeks of working with the other guys, you know, when you had to produce 1,000 pairs a day, you know, and we were just working just to try. This was a kind of thing which was forging you and a special attitude.
So that gave you a better understanding of what to apply within your design process.
Yeah, it was giving you a kind of also, it was giving you a benefit that you could discuss with technicians afterwards, like a designer, you know, because you would always have, you still have this kind of, I would say, opposition between a designer and a technician, because everybody is defending his position or defending his ideas. But mm-hmm. having this kind of knowledge on the inside, the discussion with the technician was much yeah. more
was
easy.
Was there ever a time where you was designing something, but the technology wasn't available for you to realize your what you was trying to sure. manifest?
Sure. Sure. But this is part of your job, you know. I always had a kind of principle. I was always asking for the extreme because I knew that I will never get it, you know. And before starting with doing compromises at the beginning, I was just asking for the biggest thing, you know, the extreme thing. And when I know that it was easier for me to handle with compromises.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. So in the early, you started off at Adidas France, right? And then you moved over to Germany in the early 90s, from what I've had conversation with Jace about. And so you went from basically being a designer and part of a team to heading up the whole thing. I mean, the responsibility attached, how did you approach that? And how different was it to what you was already used to and the challenges you faced?
I think the one thing I always tried to keep, it was if you manage a team, you have to show to the guys that you are an example. And this is what the guys told me afterwards. And they told me, you know, Jacques, every time we came into your office, we saw where you were designing. You had prototypes on your desk. It was not just a manager taking care of the administrative side or paper or something like that. I wanted to be part of a work, of a regular work. And that's something which you have to, well, at least it was one of my motto, you know, which was I was following. It was not easy to manage a group of people. And I would say, especially designers, you know, because probably you know that the designers, their ego is like the Eiffel Tower in Paris, you know, and you have to be careful. You have to find the right attitude. You have to find the right solutions and all the problems. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting, you know. I don't want to say I was the best manager, no. But I think the thing I want to say, you know, you have to, as I said before, show you are an example. Show you, and these guys, that's the best thing you can do.
And nurturing the next generation is key, isn't it? You know, mentoring people and sort of nurturing talent, would you say, is that as well as a big responsibility?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that you've done most recently, Jacques, working, you know, with the team to kind of bring back the ZX, you did the ZX 10,000 celebrating, was it, I think it's 30 years of the original shoe. I mean, what was it like, you know, working with this kind of new team of designers on bringing back one of your children in a way? How was that?
I enjoyed this the work because we were a small team. We were basically four guys. There was a marketing guy, there was a designer, and there was a I would say a material and color designer, and myself. And the way we worked, first of all, when you are a team, each member of the team has to have a respect to the other guy, and this was something we achieved at the beginning. And everybody was doing or giving his ideas, and it was discussed, you know, and we ended up to something where we ended up to an agreement, you know.
Yeah.
We never left a meeting room and saying, oh, bullshit, or what are we doing next? we always leaving the office of a meeting room and saying, oh, now, okay, let's do it next step. You know?
Yeah,
and basically the idea of this shoe was also was I loved the basic idea how to say we are doing now a new shoe, how can we do that shoe, and we just went back to the period of time when the last when the ZX1000 series came out in 89, and we say now our last shoe is the ZX9000, so now we have to do the next ZX. And we said, maybe it could be a ZX10,000. So what can we do? And we did this 2 or 3 years ago. It was 2018 or 2019. And we said, we cannot just say now we 19 or 18 and we do now a new ZX, we said we go back to the to 89. So we put ourselves in 89 and looked at what was possible to do from a technical point of view, from a production point of view, from a material point of view. And we just put this in this new shoe. That's the reason you don't see knitting as an example. You don't see a lot of welding stuff, you know. It's more or less like stitching pieces like it was done in 89, you know.
Yeah,
it was more like using construction, how it was done in 89, or technologies. Yeah. And this was a little bit of thing. And when you do this, you also respect, I think you get more credibility. Mm. Instead of ending 89 with a ZX9000 and doing a ZX10000 in 22 or 21 with the technologies you have today.
Yeah.
It's I would say from a consumer point of view, the guy would say, hey, this guy, we're waiting so long to come out with a new ZX10000. You know, it's a little bit, the problem, probably a mistake was in 89, not just stopping with the ZX9000. Maybe in 90 or 91, we should, we should have come out with a ZX10000, you know, and go ahead with kind of what, with new 10, 12,000 or I don't know.
So when can we expect the ZX20,000?
You know, I have a lot, I don't have some guidance about that, so it's more or less you have to ask the Adidas people.
Yeah,
I would but do it. I would do it.
I would love to see you do a new one. Seriously,
I already have some ideas. I would do it. I would do it in a more disruptive way.
Oh, well,
let's make that happen.
I love this word, disruptive. Yeah. That's one of my favorite
Be an
words.
Agitator. Do you know what I mean? You're disruptive, you know? Yeah. Just like really like just
It's reflecting, it's reflecting what's going on today in
exactly.
the world.
Exactly. Yeah. And the amount of and the technology and you'll have at your fingertips now to bring into play, like some of the meta materials, maybe, or something like that. I don't know. You know, but
I don't want to say it. I don't want
to. No. They're going to pay you first before you come out with anything. You know?
No.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, the latest running shoes, Jack, I mean, they just, you know, they're making people run faster, which I find the amazing thing. I mean, what's the kind of the bounds of possibility? I mean, are we going to still keep seeing new shoes, you know, from Adidas, Nike, even Saucony, that are just going to keep making people run faster, do you think?
I think it's not only about being fast. I think it's about comfort, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's about respecting your body. It's about respecting yourself, your foot. It's about a respect of your foot. That's for me, it was and still is today.
Definitely. What was your thoughts of...
I think research, I think there is a new thing going on in sports. It's what we call a cognitive research. And that's for me, it's an area which we have to dig in. You know?
No, totally.
And this area will probably give you much more new ideas about how to build your equipment.
How was you know, when Boost first came out, my mind was blown. What was your thoughts on that technology when it first became apparent to you and introduced to you?
To be honest, I had some concern at the beginning. Not because of a functionality of a material, because of the properties, but more or less about because of a visual of the material.
Yes. It doesn't and look it was, great.
Yeah. That's exactly what you are saying. So I remember some discussions I had with Bernd Waller. I don't know if you... Bernd Waller was at that time head of innovation at Adidas, and he came, he showed me the first shoe, and I said, wow, you have to be used to, you know, this kind of visual. I thought the material was great, but I had some, But at the end, it became an argument for a buying, purchasing argument for the consumer. Because I remember, you know, Adidas had a Y3 store in Paris, a concept store in Paris, and I think I went there when the first Boost shoes came out, and I came into the store and I looked at the basically we had just white free shoes, but then we had an Adidas shoe with Boost. And I asked the guy, how are you selling this? And he told me, I don't sell this. I don't know what it makes. Just the guys come in, the people were coming in the store and say, hey, we want the shoe with this kind of polystyrene look.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This kind of packing,
that's right. Yeah,
packaging.
That's exactly
stuff.
What I thought.
So
that's exactly what it looks like.
It became, I would say, a feature because the people were not used to see it in a shoe, you know.
Yeah.
And that was a kind of buying argument.
Yeah.
So it was basically, probably at that time, I was a little bit much more focusing on the technical side of the material.
Yeah. So Jack, sadly, we have to wrap it up now, but the final question we generally ask all the designers is, of all of the many shoes that you designed over the years, is there one that is your favorite?
Well, I think coming back to the Forum, mm-hmm. or to ZX500.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing is that I did some good stuff. I did some bad stuff. I did some shit.
Hey, if you didn't do the bad stuff, you wouldn't have known what the good stuff was.
I'm putting everything on the same level in my pieces of work, you know, because I think good things are good things. Bad things, you learn a lot, you know, and that's the point, you know. I can also say that Porsche, working for Porsche Design was a great experience for me, you know, and because working in a company like Adidas was already something interesting, but having an additional partner like Porsche Design was also something which was a big learning for me. Mm-hmm. And because you're exchanging ideas, you're exchanging way of working, you're exchanging different approaches. And once you get the trust of this external partner like Porsche Design, that's for me was a great, I would say something which I can only be proud of.
No, well, you know,
I mean, that's quite an accolade, isn't it? To kind of have the approval of Porsche something pretty special.
And I've just got to give you Drew credit, Jacques, because the thing is, I mean, what some of the things that you've designed have had a profound impact on not just my life, but on a lot of people that I know, and they so appreciate you and what you have brought, and, you know, intentionally, unintentionally, however, you know, you really have done such a fantastic job, and to chat to you now is basically one of those sort of I don't normally get gassed when I talk to people, right? This is the thing. But seriously, Jacques, I mean, it's an honor and privilege to chat to you today, and I have to, you know, thank Jace, my co-presenter, for making it happen, because it's one of those lifelong dreams, you know what I mean? You know,
thank you very much, and I appreciate
thank you.
I think I always like to discuss or to have this kind of discussion. I call it conversations, you know, and it's more open thing. And it's coming, it's gut feeling thing, you know, it's not something which is written. It has to be open. It has to be free. And that's it.
Brilliant.
No. Absolutely. No, that's you. It. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jacques. As Kish said, it's been a real honor. And we know that, you know, not just the Adidas fans out there, that they have such reverence for you. So, it's been fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to you too. And anytime.
Thanks, Jacques. Take care.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Jace. Dude. My mind has been blown, mate. Do you know what I mean? That is like one of my all-time heroes, as I said to him to his face. Do you know what I mean? But Jacques the Shang, man. What a ledge. He's so humble, though.
He is.
He doesn't, I don't know if he cares about, or not even cares. He understands the magnitude of his influence just that's permeated through the whole of the world.
I almost kind of don't think he quite got just how much people love him in some ways, which, you know, I guess that's the nature of a lot of designers, you know.
It just adds to his greatness, I guess, at the end of the day, ironically.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
What a humble guy.
I knew you were going to love
it. What a humble guy.
I knew you were going to
love it. Yeah. No. Big yourself up, mate. You made that happen.
No, not at all. It's, you know, we do this for everyone. So, absolutely.
Well, we do. You know what I mean?
So,
yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, that's it for another episode, everyone. Thanks for listening. And remember to send your questions to us on Twitter or Instagram. You can send them to us at soulful_podcast. You can also follow Kish at KishCash1 and myself, Jason, on at Made by Jace, and our exec producer, David Blazig. And don't forget to subscribe, of course. If you like it, please do leave us a review. We do love those reviews.
This has been a Soho Radio Originals production. See you next time.